This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello, welcome to David's Book Talk, and we have a very special guest, my favorite guest, Lisa Scottolini, New York Times bestselling author and number four for this book. Every 15 minutes, it is out from St. Martin's Press. Hello.
Hello, and thank you for saying that.
So this book is about a sociopath. We've never written about a sociopath before.
No, I never have. I just, you know, I got the idea, actually, from, how weird does this sound, my own life. I've thought back, and I can't reveal who, but I do think at one point I knew a sociopath and was in a relationship with one. And obviously it broke up, which is a good thing. But I was like, you know, was that person a sociopath? And so I sort of wanted to, I went to the local hospital, and I said, you know, what's a sociopath like? And is it possible that I wouldn't know one was in my life, but everything would just be horrible? And he said, yes, absolutely. And I said, let me tell you this. If you were a psychiatrist, and you would you know a sociopath? He said, no, that's actually very hard to know. And I sort of said, do you see them coming? And he said, no, because they're already there. And I was like, okay, that's the book. And so the whole real book is about, you know, it was kind of like what I went through, which is, I didn't know this. I didn't see this person coming. What are the signs? Can you, as a reader, figure out who the sociopath was? And so far, I mean, the reviews have actually been the best of my life, and no one has guessed, even though the clues are there.
I went into withdrawal after I read this book, because I'm like, now how am I going to find another good book to read? I'm seriously.
Aw, that's lovely of you to say.
It's true. I'm not even making that up. People think, oh, he's just saying that because they're friends. I'm like, no, this is absolutely the truth. I'm like, what do I read now? I got to find something just as good as Lisa's.
And you want to read.
It's like, it's weird. It's like, I'm sure you felt it the same way when you read a really great book. You're like, now I got to find another one that's just as good.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, I read all the time, and I'm just right now still in the middle of, sort of the end of book tour, and so I'm reading even more, which I love. But you do get surprised at how often you're disappointed.
Right.
But I've learned not to, this is my one rule, I don't finish, if I don't like the book, I don't finish it.
Right.
I don't beat myself up because you go, oh, I spent that money. But you go, all right, because your time is more valuable. And there's so many good books out there. And you just got to keep trying.
Right.
And I found some.
But how do you write one good book after another, Lisa? It's so difficult. How do you do it?
Oh, that's so sweet of you to say. I mean, that's what I really hope is that. Like, you know, when you get to be my age, you start to say, I've been doing this for like 23, 25 years. And about 23 novels. And I start to go, why do you write? And I know I write to connect. You know, that's how we met, right?
Right,
and
exactly.
I like that connection. I like to connect with people. And if you say, what are you trying to leave behind in life? It's really just like really quality fiction that is always good. You know, that's what you really want to do. So for me, I mean, I put a lot into each book. I always try to find what the emotional truth of the book in my own life.
Well, you have relatable, and you have relatable characters. I think that's a big thing with you. People relate to your characters so well.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, I hope that's what I try for. I don't really do a, you know, the Superman kind of 007 character very well. I don't really even try. The guy in this book, I think, is, you know, he's a dad. He's a really interesting, smart, lovely man, and I mean, I have a crush on him, so.
I was going to say, you would probably fall in love with him.
Oh, totally I would. I am in love with him. The problem is he just doesn't exist. That's, you know. But you want to write characters that you can get a crush on, or not that, and they're not perfect. He's not perfect. I mean, he's a psychiatrist with a secret anxiety disorder.
Mm-hmm.
He sort of undergoes, I think, a change in the book where he becomes better. Like, he becomes a better version of himself, which is what you hope, like, we all do to a certain extent when you
and you know what's inter-
hard things.
What's
like
interesting, Laura was telling me that if you go back and read the book again, you can actually see the clues that lead you to the end of the book. And I thought, wow, I didn't even know. And I didn't even notice the clues when I was reading. I think I was enjoying it too much.
Notice them. I had a reader the other day. Actually, it was an interview, and she said, you know, I went back, and I saw the, you know, but I feel like I go plant the clues. Because as you know, and I've said this before at signings, I mean, I don't know, you know, people said, you know how it ends. I don't even know how it middles. I don't know anything. But I just, I know, you're impressed.
I am impressed, actually.
But I just try to tell the story, and then I start to think, what's really going on here? And that would really, you know, wow, that, you know, they say that stuff about the characters. I mean, there is a little bit of the characters start to change and morph and announce themselves in ways you didn't anticipate. And I'm like, yeah, that subtext is there. Go with that. That was pretty good. That's a pretty good surprise ending.
It's just such an, I mean, the more you get into this book, the more you just, I mean, I was at work, I took the book to work, and I want to sit there and read the book all day, and it's like, it's that much of a drive, because you're so into the story. It's like, what's going to happen here? What's all going on, and where is she headed with this story? And that's the fun of reading, not knowing what's coming next.
Right. I mean, I feel that way, and thank you for saying that. To me, it's kind of like, yeah, like what? And I didn't know some of it. Like, there's, and I don't want to reveal anything because there are twists and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, but I remember when, you know, it's, the psychiatrist is dealing with, he's treating a young teenage patient who has OCD. And, you know, I actually interviewed somebody who has OCD, and they didn't want to be acknowledged, which I honored.
Right.
But to hear how tormented that was, and sort of like what their life was like, and even that character, he gave me a surprise, like, I won't tell exactly what happens, but when they go to try to find him, when he disappears, and that's not giving much away, and they go to find him, and then it is revealed where he is when they happen to be watching a TV, I was like, you know what? That makes absolute sense. That's what that character, who's pretty unstable and desperate, he would do that. So, and then all of a sudden, it kind of like changed direction. I had to go, oh my God, I had to do some research real quick, and it wasn't really easy research. But you start to understand, I mean, secretly what the book, there's a link in the book about the untreated mental illness and the link between that and criminality. I mean, that's the stuff that I think is part of our modern world, and I kind of wanted to explore that. Mm-hmm. You know, that I kind of wish that we had a, you know, like we're supposed to do physical health exams. I wish we did mental health exams before. Because everybody has ups and downs, and some people have more serious disorders that really need treatment, and their life can be better, and we can all be safer and happier as a culture. But I don't know if that will ever happen.
You seem to go with uncharted territory with every book. I mean, something new in every book, which I really like. I mean, it's like, what's she going to tackle next? What's the next subject? And as a reader, you always want to know, what's my author going to write next? What kind of a book am I going to read now? You know, and then I open your book and read it, and just you get into the story, and it's, I mean, I have authors that I read that the book doesn't do anything for me, and I get upset. I think, well, why did I like one of their books and not another one? That's really an interesting thing.
Yeah, and I feel the same way as a reader, and sometimes I think, you know, that's especially the problem when you're me. Not that it's a bad, not that I'm complaining, but you really want to keep it fresh. And the only answer to that I have is that yourself. Like, for example, I write the Rosato and D'Annunzio series that comes out in October.
Right.
I mean, the next one is Corrupted.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah, I do.
I kind of like that too. I've been writing. I'm not going to title the takes me forever. But I've been writing women, I've been got known for writing women protagonists. So there was a time when I was like, you know, you need to challenge yourself to try to write men. And a lot of the books, like, you know, I'm doing the standalones that come out in April, like this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a long time, I started writing about women. You know, then I started to write, well, what is a mother? You know, how are mothers different? Are stepmothers different from mothers who are not stepmothers? Are adoptive mothers different? Then it sort of morphed it into fathers. So it's like, you know, I was really close to my dad, and I just know him to the marrow. And sort of, so this book is also about fatherhood. That for me is a challenge. I'm a single mother. I've been a single mother my whole life. I'm not dating anyone. I'm not around a lot of men. I don't really, so I was like, I was nervous. I have to admit, I was nervous about it. And he's actually a very loving husband. I mean, he misses his wife. I'm not that. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go to write what you know, I don't know that. But I know a little, and I can imagine the rest. But like you say, you're trying to make a challenge. So that's why I go, well, geez, Scott Olini isn't known for this. Let's see if she can do it. For me, this book especially was a challenge. And then I'll shut it up, because you can see we're talking in the morning, and now I'm all caffeinated.
And I always get annoyed with people when they say your name. Everybody pronounces your name differently. It's like, and I know how it's pronounced, but I have so many people that say the name wrong, and I have to grit my teeth and not yell at them. It's like, it's not the way you pronounce
it. We've known each other for 20 years now, so, you know, but I never mind. It's such a hard name, and, you know, what can I do? They wanted, when I was first published, they wanted me to change it. They wanted me to be Lisa Scott.
Oh, really?
And I was like, oh, yeah.
I never heard that before.
No one ever talked to me about my name before, so you brought that out.
That's interesting.
it's true. And I said no, because, you know, then I was writing legal thrillers. I was a woman lawyer, ability factor. I mean, my name is on pleading. Mm-hmm. I went to Penn Law School. You can look me up under my name. And I liked that. So I wasn't going to, like, change my name, and it just sounded fake to me, and because it was. So I said no, and now I have a name that no one can pronounce. So you can't really, maybe I was wrong, but I always go with the truth. I always go with what's true, even if it doesn't work, no matter what.
And you're honest. I mean, with your columns and your books that, you know, that have the columns in it, and everything's honest with you. Everybody feels like they know you, and so they relate to you. They come meet you. They're like, I know this person. She's so warm and friendly. I feel like I know her. I feel like I've known her for years. And that's such a wonderful feeling for people.
Well, that's really nice. And, you know, that's the real, I mean, there's a great quote by Barbara Kingsolver. She said, if you want to know me, read my novels. I mean, I do think that, because the way, if you're going to write a book, especially, well, not necessarily true, only a novel, the nonfiction as well, because I know from the memoir. But you got to really tell something true about yourself. Someone is going to know you. Like, you. And that's what really books are about, isn't it? Like knowing someone, other person's soul.
Right.
That's why I read.
Do you write 7 days a week?
Absolutely I do. Not when I'm on tour. But, yeah, I don't go out. I mean, it sounds bad, but I'm kind of a homebody anyway. Mm-hmm. So there's, like, people go, can you have lunch? No, I can't have lunch, actually. That's the middle of my work day. And, you know, writing, you put yourself into a little bit of a spell, just like you do when you're reading. Like, I don't really like to get, like, my reading even interrupted.
What would we find you?
I sound crabby.
If we were at your house and you were writing, what would we find you eating? What do you like to eat while you write?
Well, lately I've been breaking to eat. You know why? Because I got a treadmill desk.
Oh, wow.
So I used to eat. No, I have a treadmill desk. I got it a couple months ago. I bought it for myself for Christmas. And I love it. Because if you're doing, like, I do 2,000 words a day. Okay, so that can take from 9 in the morning till some days it can only, like, someday I'll look out and I'll be done, like, at 4 if I have a good day. But if I do, lots of times, and the bottom line is I'm sitting on my butt all day long, and I start to have back issues. I'm like, you know what? I've been reading about these treadmill desks for years, and I was like, try it. And now it's great. The problem is you can't eat at your treadmill desk, because I know, because I snack, and I had popcorn, and then I still, and then it was getting stuck in the rotors. And I had to clean that out. And I was like, okay, I even took a picture of it. People just follow me on Facebook. Because I was like, when I looked down on the treadmill and I saw the popcorn, I was like, Lisa, this is not the idea of a treadmill desk.
And see, that's what you, like, do. You express yourself in other people. In other words, you say all the things other people wish they could say a lot of times, or wish they could be honest about. You're honest about everything.
I kind of am. Well, that's a great thing. I think, you know, especially when we're growing up, you feel like, oh, if people knew that about me, or they can't know that about me. But the truth is, it's like, you know, the world doesn't end if people know stuff about you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
People are, it doesn't. And so,
and it's kind of refreshing, too.
Like, actually, it's better, because you see all the commonalities in people. Mm-hmm. And then you can talk to each other and feel closer to each other. I don't even get when people say, like, I don't know, I just don't feel a great need for privacy. Now, I've been writing for 20 years, essentially opening my heart for 20 years to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
I'm used to it. Knock wood, I'm still fine.
Exactly. But, and, you know,
I'm crazy.
But I think to myself, well, I want to be that open. And you should be open, because the more open, the better you feel, I think. I mean, you let things out, you keep things. And you have a quote in the beginning of this from Sigmund Freud about holding things in, which is interesting.
Right. The book was so interesting because I read about sociopathy, and that's when I read that 1 in 24 people is a sociopath.
That's hard to believe. I can't believe that. Is that really
not
true?
Not for me. I will tell you something, David. Not for me. Because especially since I wrote the book, because now I'm getting email from people who are saying, I really loved your book, and you got it right, which is nice, and saying, I live with a sociopath. I've gotten a couple of emails like that. That's a scary thing. And I actually talked to one of my psychiatric sources, and I said, okay, how do I respond to this email? Because I respond to my email, and I also want to be responsible about it. Because my first instinct was to write back and go, run away, move, this is not a good thing. But what he said was that they can't hear that message. What you should reply is, since you know that is true, you need to take care of yourself, because this person is not acting in your interest. And that's a true thing. You know, it's not like they're all murderers like Dexter or Ripley.
Yeah, they hide it.
They hide it, and they use people. They just ruthlessly use people without feeling anything for them. They figure out how to manipulate, and people who are, like, open-hearted and trusting, like your favorite author, like people like me, you know, and like you. I mean, I think good people tend to see the good in people, project the good into people. They don't realize when they're getting manipulated, because they're manipulated. And that's what I wanted to write about.
And it's fascinating. I mean, psychology itself is fascinating. I mean, it's...
I know. I really feel like I haven't decided what the next standalone will be, but I feel like I want to stay with something with, you know, psychiatry and psychology and mental illness, because I think it's very pervasive, and I also want to destigmatize it. I mean, I've had times in my life when I was depressed. I was in therapy for 10 years. I think more people should say that. I don't think I would be as happy a person if I hadn't been. And people, you know, they got to figure your stuff out. Just got to figure yourself out.
Well, you look at People magazine every week, it's somebody admitting something. And somebody admits this.
Right, and it's such a good world that way.
I mean, who knew?
And
I didn't
I'm
even
so
know.
I'm glad that.
Yeah. There's just so.
What were you going to say?
I was just going to say that I was reading about Rita Wilson having a cancer scare. I think she found a little bit of a cancer, and I didn't even know that. And it's
she had a mastectomy.
Yeah.
No.
And it's like.
I know. And you know what's weird? I saw that play. Like, she's in a play. It doesn't matter. But I saw a play, Fish in the Dark, with my daughter. She was so good in the play, and she was adorable, and she's cool, and she's great. And then, yeah. It's good for people to come out, because then people who feel so alone and weird and different, it helps them.
Absolutely. I think it's a good thing that people aren't afraid to speak up now. When they're hurting, or when they've hurt, or when whatever's happening to them, they let it out. I mean, it's like Bruce Jenner tonight oh my God.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I mean, and people are so judgmental, but you know what? Let them be judgmental.
You know what happens though? The people are judgmental until they find out there's something going on in their family.
Right.
And then they become human, because judgmental is the opposite of being a human being. I mean, nobody has any right to judge anybody else. And the more you live, that's what I like about getting older. I mean, the more you live, the more you see. And you see that, well, you know, isn't it always that way? I mean, the people who are, I don't know, how many preachers turned into, you know, we're doing shenanigans. How about the priests that were doing shenanigans? I mean, horrible, you know, rape.
Yeah, that's horrible. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things that people have secrets, and sometimes they protest them the most, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
I feel happy that people are changing and people are being more open about things.
Now, I mean, when you write,
go ahead.
I was going to say, when you write, do you is there somebody you that looks at your stuff before? Or I mean, I wonder how you do it. I mean, is it just, have you gotten to the point where you know what you're doing and you don't need, and it just flows automatically, or do you have somebody?
I wrote from day one. That said, I'm not at the point where I, like, everything just flows. Writing is really hard. You have to have clarity first. And then you got to tell a really compelling story. I always sort of say to myself, that great Hemingway quote, I think I've even said it to you, write drunk, edit sober. Like, just get it down on the paper and then edit it all the way through.
Right.
It never really just, sometimes it just flows. But most times I have to think, okay, what does this room look like? What do these people look like? Because you can't just launch into it, because you want to tell somebody, somebody needs their mind. They can't just take your word for it.
Right.
So you try to think of, what are the people like? How do they talk? How are they different? How do they talk in different ways? Not some people use long sentences, some people use short ones.
I find myself loving dialogue. Like, I'm reading a book now with a lot of dialogue, and I love dialogue. Back and forth dialogue.
I do too, because I really think you get to express the characters. Dialogue is important because it does a lot of things at once. It can move a plot forward and can also express character. Like, I think the dialogue in this book, like, there's a lot of it that serves a purpose. First, there's some explaining I have to do, which is a little difficult. But for example, there's a character in this book who's a lawyer, and he's kind of a little bit of a wisecracking lawyer, and
he's
the kind of lawyer he is. Well, thank you. And
I thought,
his dialogue, so you laugh. I hope it makes you laugh. When I wrote it, it made me laugh. I was like, you know what? You could use a little comic relief in a book about a sociopath.
Exactly.
And
it works.
That's why it's there. If you do dialogue well, if an author is doing dialogue well, it will be fun for the reader. And it's also, secretly, it's a little easier. Like, it's easier to read. When you look at a page of good dialogue, like, I try to, but I'll use someone like Spencer for the Spencer series, Robert Parker.
Oh, yeah.
You can look at a page and there's a lot of white. And just visually, you see, this is easy reading. Somebody says something back. If it's Hawk, it's going to be funny. It's quippy. You're a fly on the wall, and there's nothing better than that.
Mm-hmm.
That's best.
Stuart Woods does that well, too. He has a lot of dialogue in his books, too. I mean, 33 Joan Barrington books. It's hard to believe. I mean, and that's the thing with a series.
Well, I think...
series can get so old, you really have to keep it fresh every time. That's hard to do. I mean...
And so I like writing the series, and I like writing the standalones, and I love writing the memoir, which is in the summer. The new one's going to be called, Does This Beach Make Me Look Fat? And
that makes
my daughter thought of that. Francesca, it's great. So you hope that that cross-fertilizing happens, and to a certain extent, all the writing helps keep the other writing fresh.
Exactly. And fresh is where it's at. That's what people want to read. They want to read something that's new. I mean, I do. I don't want to read the same book over and over.
Me too.
I
think, right.
And I mean, there are some authors, they say, have interchangeable characters. Like, they just change the names of the characters, and the plots are basically the same. And I don't want to read something like that. I want to read something that I really get involved in, where I'm reading late at night and it's raining and I feel kind of freaked out. And I love that feeling.
Yeah, me too. That's the joy of reading. And that's really what, reading is such a joy. I love to read. And that's, this is, I'm going to be sad when this book ends. Like that.
Exactly. And you are. And when you really like a book, you don't want it to end because you're enjoying it so much. It's like a major enjoyment in your life. It's like going to a baseball game. You enjoy it. And then when it's over, it's like, oh, now what? What do I do next?
It's like going to a baseball game. I like that. I think I've been to one baseball game in my life. So.
Really? Only one?
Probably. Maybe, honestly, three. My whole entire life.
What would you do if you had more time?
Go to a baseball game.
I think there's more than that, Lisa.
I'd probably read. I'd probably read.
Well, you read anyway, so.
I don't know. I love love what I do. I love, even though it's busy, and I love it.
Are there any series that you read every book of?
Oh, that's a hard question. I think Spencer I did for a long time.
I got to meet Robert Parker.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, he was at Bryn Mawr twice. I can still remember. I can still see his sneakers. Isn't that weird how I remember his sneakers? Of all things that I remember about Robert Parker was his sneakers. Why is it you focus on one thing with a person? There's always one thing that you look at and remember. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's brilliant. We call it, what is the thing about him? What is the thing that, yeah, it's cool.
With you, it's a personality. I mean, you have such a wonderful personality. I mean, that's the thing that that's the thing I remember about you.
Thank you.
And your smile, of course. But, you know, there's little things. There's always little things that people remember about you. Like people say, I have a big head, you know. It's like, okay, I have a big head. So what are you going to do about it?
That's not what I remember. I remember your hugs. Now people are going to really wonder, what is it with you still?
I know. Didn't they get married or something? You know, it's like, and it's funny because people used to say that about me and Marianne. They're like, when are you getting married? You know, it's like, wait a minute. I didn't even know we were engaged.
Hey,
yeah.
We're friends. Slow down.
You can't be friends with women anymore. Remember when you could be friends with women?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
It's like people just assume there's more to it, you know? It's like, so you're finished C. Are you already have an idea for D?
No, I've corrupted. So I have about 3 weeks more. I have interviews today. In fact, I have an interview coming up today, so I probably should get off soon.
Right.
But I could talk to you all day, but I'll get fired.
Oh, really? I wouldn't like that.
No, me neither. And then I have to, I don't know, I have to get some idea. I'll usually get an idea, but I usually don't get an idea while I'm working on a book. I'm too focused on the book.
When do the ideas come to you? Are you sleeping and sometimes you wake up with an idea?
No, it's really like, it's almost a day after I finish the book. Like, it's weird. I'll just go, it's almost like your brain says, okay, now you can think about this thing.
Right.
And, but you can't think about it while you're, I'm a one thing at a time kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't multitask when I write because I think that messes up your concentration and that will mess up your book.
I agree. You have to focus on one book at a time. I mean, I'm sure
absolutely.
There are people that can do it, two or three. Nora Roberts probably has five at a time or something. But, you know, like, you can only do
one. Well, not her yet. Maybe someday, but.
Good God. I mean, but it's like amazing what she's done. I mean, I applaud her. Believe me, I applaud her.
No, me too. Oh, I think she's great, and I think she deserves all of her success. And I feel like she doesn't even get the credit she deserves. She deserves to be reviewed more, and I think she's great. I buy a lot of Nora Roberts, and I read a lot of Nora Roberts.
So. Do you really? Interesting.
Absolutely, I do.
Everybody.
Absolutely, I
isn't
do.
It interesting how people want to know so much about you as an author? I mean, you've become so famous, and it's got to feel a little weird sometimes.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, you have.
I don't even think that's true.
Well, you know people all over the country, all over the world.
Yes, but David, the real me never leaves my house, as you know, so.
The real you? There's a fake you?
No, but I mean, given my druthers, I mean, I'd love to meet my readers. That's great. But I'm such a homebody, I swear to God. I just love books, so I feel lucky.
Yeah, I guess that does make you a homebody when you love books. People think, you know.
Yeah.
That's all you like.
You can read them anywhere, but you just like, it's calming and it's restorative. You know, you nurture yourself when you read.
And then you want to share it. Like, watching Mad Men last Sunday night, I'm like, oh, my God, that's like the best hour of television I've watched in ages. And you want to share
it
with somebody.
Well, there you go. That's how I feel, too. And that's what art does, isn't it? You share it. That's why book clubs, like we've talked about this, why book clubs are so. People sharing some art form.
It's that.
And going, oh, I love this. Do you love this? Yes, I love this part. What part don't you like? All that stuff.
You look at things, you watch TV, you read a book, whatever it is you're doing, and you get so in the moment, you get so much pleasure out of it, and you want to share it with other people. I mean, that's a wonderful thing.
I know. Well, David, I love you deeply, but I have one more minute.
Right.
It's 11:39, so I should probably go because I have to be on someone else at 11:40.
That's right. Do you really? Wow.
But this, yeah, I do. So.
I guess we have to let Lisa go.
It's been wonderful.
It's been wonderful.
I know, I'm sad.
But that's all right.
In person, and we can always do that. We talk every book, and I'm happy to do it. I'm pleased to do it. An honor. Right. So thank you.
But the book again is called Every 15 Minutes. It's out from St. Martin's Press and all your bookstores now. Thanks again, Lisa. And this has been David's Book Talk.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.